Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special episode of the Hop-Ons podcast. John, this is our bridge.
It is. This is our bridge.
Our bridge from season two to season three. We're recording it after season three, episode one, so that is in the can, as they say.
Hey.
But we have a bit of a problem.
Yes.
It's not our problem, but we need to talk about it. Mm. So since we left, this is what's really interesting. Around the time that we stopped recording for season two, the entertainment industry, and I suppose just this country, I suspect, maybe there are some international celebrities implicated in this, but it feels almost exclusively an American problem. A lot of prominent, influential men have been accused and implicated in rape, sexual assault, and just other nefarious behavior. And Jeffrey Tambor is one of them.
Yeah.
So, as I understand it, Jeffrey Tambor worked and starred on a show called
Transparent.
Yeah. Thank you. He won a myriad of different awards, but he was accused of aggressive behavior, sexual assault. I don't think anyone went as far as to say that he raped them, but awful, devious, deplorable behavior.
Yeah.
To the point that he quit the show before he was fired. So unlike Kevin Spacey, who was fired from his Netflix show, Jeffrey Tambor, and what's frustrating is how he actually framed it. I don't have the language in front of me, but he framed it as, this is not why I agreed to do this show. It's become impossible for me to continue. And what distinguishes Tambor from many of those who have been accused of this kind of behavior, he vehemently denies doing anything wrong.
Right. The wording was something like, I didn't do any of this, but how could I possibly go back?
Right.
And that was when one person had accused him. Since then, I read an article this morning. There's been three total. The makers of Transparent are going to continue without him, from what I gather. And it's rough. And for us, and we talked about this in a little bit in the show we just recorded, it is really hard for me to watch him now and enjoy him. And I have to say, before all this came out, I loved watching Jeffrey Tambor. I think he is a remarkable actor. He's very, very, very funny as George Sr. and as Oscar, and I love seeing him, but it's really hard now.
It's incredibly difficult, and we had always talked about how he was so convincing as a character who was sexually depraved, and that's one of those moments where we were able to say, well, look at how exceptional he is as an actor, because he's able to successfully convince us of this kind of depravity. But art seems to imitate life to some degree, or vice versa, because this seems to be how he conducts himself. Mm-hmm. And again, I haven't spoken about this at all, really, with anyone, but I think it's important to say a few things to begin. First, Jeffrey Tambor is not Harvey Weinstein, and there's a spectrum here.
Yes.
All of it's bad.
Sadly.
Sure. Yes. All of it's bad, but let's certainly not unfairly implicate Jeffrey Tambor in doing the sorts of things that Harvey Weinstein has been accused of doing. But it's still bad. It's still using a position of power within an industry that recognizes a particular type of power, and having very little awareness of what you've done and how it may have affected people. And it's doubly complicated because I want to believe every accusation, but I don't know exactly how to approach each of these individuals and how to think about the punishment that should be levied against them. It's all very nebulous and very complicated, but what you said I think is quite right. It makes watching this show harder now.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I don't feel like we're necessarily like at a loss of what to do. I think finishing season three and season four, and if Netflix does decide to put out season five, I think then we might have to talk about it.
I think so too, yeah.
But right now, you know, there's a lot of great people that put in a lot of great work on these, and you know, it does come to that. It's always hard to decide, you know, to take like someone's work and other people that have worked on a show and take the one bad person out and not appreciate them but still be able to watch it. It's hard.
Sure. With someone like Woody Allen, it's not hard to say I'm not watching a Woody Allen Correct. Film because Woody Allen is such an important part of the production of his films.
Yes.
He's not just a single entity. Without Woody Allen, a Woody Allen film wouldn't exist, I suppose. Of course, there are actors and producers and people involved, but he's such an important part of that whole creative process. But the show could lose Jeffrey Tambor and still continue, I suppose.
Yes, I agree.
Because you're right, there are these other people involved. But now I can't help, as I'm watching these episodes, thinking to myself, well, what happened on the set of Arrested Development? Who is... Because, and this is, I suppose, what is so instructive about someone like Harvey Weinstein, rarely are these isolated affairs.
Correct.
This is serial behavior, or it seems to be. And sure, while I would definitely entertain the idea that someone could do this once, immediately acknowledge they did something wrong and never do something like this again. Considering how Tambor reacted to this, it doesn't feel like he has that kind of perspective. It feels like he thinks I'm being implicated in something I didn't do. Or if I did something wrong, that was never my intention.
It feels like almost like he doesn't give a fuck. That's how I feel.
It really feels that way, right?
And I've never, I don't necessarily know what Jeffrey Tambor's ever been like off camera. But I would not have ever thought that. I would never have thought that he's just like George Sr. But the way he's coming across right now is exactly like that. He's cold, and the thing he's upset the most about is that he can't go back to work.
Right.
And that's just fucked up. I mean, it truly is. And I think especially working on a show like Transparent, where they went out of their way to hire, you know, I read like 60-plus transgender, LGBTQ, you know, members of the community, like, to be on that show, writer's room, extras, everything.
Same thing with a show like Orange is the New Black, I think, where they're showing you this diverse environment, and they're actively trying to mirror that diversity in the cast, the writers, the production team, everyone.
Yeah.
And Transparent feels very similar in that way.
Yeah, and to have your main lead, who is winning you all these awards, who is a powerful, in the end of the day, a big, strong, straight white guy, to be this way, it's a slap in the face of a lot of people.
Sure.
And it's truly disheartening, and it does make what we do way harder. And not to say that it's like our job or anything, but I love to do this.
Sure, I do too.
And it is rough. So I think finishing season 3 and season 4, unless more terrible things come out, I'm okay with that. But season 5, we definitely have to talk about it, depending on what
happens.
That would
get complicated. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, because I have heard nothing about Arrested Development, and I guess I even pause because I'm thinking, well, are we suggesting that we're okay talking about this show because no one else has been implicated and this happened in the past? How do you negotiate that tricky ethical area, and what would happen if in 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 weeks Mitchell Hurwitz or Michael Cera or anyone else on this show is implicated in this kind of behavior? What do we do from there? How do we meaningfully continue doing this? Now, I'm talking about hypotheticals at this point.
Sure.
I want to be clear, this is just a hypothetical, but I think you're right. That puts me in the kind of position that I don't like to be in, because I just want everyone to behave. Just behave. Acknowledge your privilege.
Be a fucking person.
And don't abuse people. Or if you do, this is part of what's so frustrating about his reaction to this, because there's a way, and Kevin Spacey did something very similar. There's a way, and maybe the problem is not what they said, but the medium they chose. I don't know if a press release is perfect for this. I wonder if instead Kevin Spacey sat down for 30 or 40 minutes and just talked through all of this. That might be better. Because Tambur, if he can't acknowledge that, well, you may have behaved inappropriately, even if you didn't intend to, because perhaps you've internalized your privilege to a point that you don't even see it.
Correct.
I wonder if, spoken about in those terms, if he might be able to say something a little more articulate and sensitive than what he has said, because a lot of these press releases sound terrible because you're asking someone, and again, to be clear, I'm not trying to engender sympathy for someone who has sexually assaulted someone else, but if given the opportunity to talk about this in more detail, if given more time, because press releases are a few hundred words, I wonder if he would have something different to say, and I would like to see, because, and the reason why I say all this is because I don't want to imagine that Jeffrey Tambur is this kind of person.
Same.
But this press release makes him sound like, and everything he said to this point makes him sound like an incredibly insensitive person who has internalized his privilege to the point that he doesn't even acknowledge doing something wrong. And that's regrettable, because I also feel like part of the problem is, especially with people who have raped or sexually assaulted others, we don't know what to do with them. As a collective, what do we do with these people? Do we ignore them? Mm. Do we push them into a corner and pretend like they don't exist? Or, which doesn't sound good, because that doesn't put them in a position where they feel as if they're part of a collective any longer. Mm. They're these persona non grata. They just don't exist anymore. Sure. And that's not helpful, and that's not healthy. But then if you just allow them to continue doing what they've always done with impunity, that's also not helpful. So part of my problem with all of this, and I'm sorry I've been talking a lot, is we don't know how to assimilate these sorts of individuals back into society in a meaningful way that also acknowledges you've done something horribly wrong. We just don't know what to do with them.
Correct.
And the press release, and then we don't hear from them for 6 months, doesn't seem like the best way to give anyone an opportunity to talk about what's happened.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the point. He doesn't want to talk about it, but I think he should be forced to.
I think he should too. And I think that, you know, because of his behavior, like, season 5 is totally up in the air. I don't see Netflix actually putting it out, especially what's happened with Spacey and House of Cards, unless they go back in and write him out completely. That's a lot of extra time and money, but that's the one thing I could see them doing. But yeah, it's just a tricky line to walk right now, I think, and as far as us go. And I just want to make sure that we're respectful for everything, and that we, you know, and if we do come across sometimes being not liking a certain thing that George Sr. does or that Oscar does, that's a big part of it now, because everything in my eyes is just tainted from what's happened.
So. It was hard to watch season 3, episode 1. Knowing what I now know, it was hard. Part of me wants to just boycott any and all conversations about George Sr. and Oscar, as silly sure. as that sounds. But again, I don't know if that's actually the solution. I don't know if the solution is just to imagine they don't exist any longer. Because again, there are consequences for doing that as well. When you marginalize people, even if they've done horrible things, I don't know how healthy that is.
Yeah,
and I have more questions than anything else.
Sure. And I think both of us are, regarding media, we're super emotional about things.
Sure.
I get very, very emotional regarding film and television. And I know for a fact this season that, you know, we get The Surrogate, and that's hilarious. And there's a lot of really, really funny things with George Sr. that comes up in this season. A lot of them. And I think us trying to look at the show objectively, which we try to do, is just – it's hard because we're emotional people when it comes to these things.
Sure.
And the whole show is just us going on and on about it. We could pick one conversation in one episode and spend an hour talking about it because that's what we do, you know. So it's just going to be hard. I mean, you're just going to have to bear with us, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny because I spent a lot of time reading and studying and researching the early modern period. So think 1550s until maybe the death of Elizabeth in 1604, okay. I think.
Yeah.
So this is the early modern period, and it extends on into James's reign, of course. But I say all this because anti-Semitism was a very popular sentiment, mm-hmm. and it was expressed and articulated in a lot of the plays that I enjoy reading, watching, writing about, and talking about. The Merchant of Venice, well, The Merchant of Venice is a tame play by comparison, mm-hmm. but it is a wildly anti-Semitic play that ends with Shylock getting converted to Christianity, forcefully mm-hmm. being converted to Christianity. That's his punishment.
Right.
Being Jewish is his punishment, basically. Yeah. And there's all of these plays that do that. But that was over 400 years ago, and scholars have found a way to compartmentalize those awful, sure. awful feelings and sentiments. And so we can talk about the kinds of anti-Semitism in plays like William Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice without also being implicated in those feelings. This is different because it's new, and it's not new. The conversation is new, but it's still evolving mm-hmm. and changing. And I try to gravitate towards those kinds of critical perspectives when thinking about how to talk about this,
sure.
but it's easier to do when what you're talking about, the kind of nefarious behavior, is 400 years old, mm-hmm. at least in the texts you're focusing on. This is just new, and I can't help but think we're talking about season 3, episode 1 in 2 weeks. Will it be impossible to talk about Will Arnett? Or it's tricky, and I don't know what to do.
Same.
I feel disarmed.
Same.
Utterly, utterly. There's one final thing I wanted to ask you about, John.
Sure.
We said we would talk about this for about 15 or 20 minutes. I mentioned Woody Allen earlier. Mm. How do you, because with someone like Woody Allen, right, it's perhaps a simpler determination to make. I won't watch his movies. What are your feelings about characters like Woody Allen, Kevin Spacey? Mm. Is this just a situation where I can no longer watch their films? I can no longer meaningfully engage in this art because of what I know about these individuals. It's different with Arrested Development because this is an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
But I was curious, do you have any thoughts about how you engage with those sorts of figures,
you know,
who feature so prominently
right, yeah.
in their films?
What's interesting is one of my favorite films of this year is Baby Driver. It's like probably my top five. And I bought it, and I was so amped to watch it again. And I couldn't because Kevin Spacey is a huge part in it.
Is he really?
And I wanted to get like a Baby Driver poster and all this stuff. And now it is impossible for me to watch a Kevin Spacey thing. But what's interesting is, and I think up until now and up until like where I'm at right now, where society is right now, I was able to watch Woody Allen stuff. And like I found myself enthralled by like the opening shots of Manhattan, like so many things like I liked about Woody Allen, but now I don't think I could ever put another Woody Allen film on. And I'm not sure if that is because now everything is so in my face and I'm kind of understanding and realizing it more, because I don't think I've ever really taken the time to like study Woody Allen, but now I can't watch it.
Sure.
And it's the same with like Weinstein's hard because the dude produced everything. And it's, I mean, his company, like every Tarantino film, everything you see at the beginning, you're like, well, this sucks, but I mean, what are you going to do? Like, a whole group of amazing people worked on this, and Weinstein just put his name on it. So
that's
a little Weinstein bit different, I think.
Weinstein is different for a variety of different reasons, because typically when we talk about creative properties, we rarely actually talk about the producers that much because they seem comparatively inconsequential.
Yeah.
Plus, Harvey Weinstein was one small but significant piece of this whole Weinstein operation.
Yes.
Right? And before what happened 2 months ago, I wonder how many people even knew who Harvey Weinstein was. Not that that makes any of this okay.
No, you're right, yeah.
To be clear, but I think you're absolutely right. His influence and his impact seems smaller compared to, again, someone like Woody Allen, who I can't imagine a Woody Allen film existing without Woody Allen.
Yeah. And like people like Louis C.K., I mean, fuck Louis C.K. Like, yeah. I won't watch anything with him in it ever again. And I loved Louis C.K. I truly did.
Yeah, his stand-up comedy is incredibly insightful at times.
The stuff that he's done is fucking disgusting. I can't – never again. Spacey, never again. I mean, it's just it sucks. Like, I really appreciated these people's work, and I just – never again can I watch it. It's just – it's – yeah, it's awful. So, yeah, I mean, that's just – that's the world we live in, and – everyone that has come forward is way stronger than I think I could ever be in my whole life. I think it's an amazing – it's a terrible thing that happened, but it's amazing that these people could speak up and say this is fucked up. Oh, it's the same with Bryan Singer. Fuck Bryan Singer, really. Every movie he's done, it makes me sad I can't watch the X-Men movies again, but really, fuck him. I mean, he
– well, you can still watch – no, you can't.
I can watch – oh, Britt Ratner. Fuck Britt Ratner, but I've always said that.
Yeah, this doesn't change. Well, you could watch
I could watch all the new ones.
What about First Class?
No, I think no. Matthew Vaughn directed that. Matthew Vaughn, I can watch First Class.
You can watch First Class.
No, I think it's disgusting and what's happened, and I'm glad that people are getting called out.
I am too. It's important. It's
super important.
Necessary. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear about something. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, they're lamenting not being able to talk about their favorite show,
that's not what
we're talking about. I understand why you might think that. What we're talking about more, we're using Arrested Development as a kind of case study for how do I engage with art and intellectual property that I enjoy, but how do I do so meaningfully and ethically, knowing what I know now. Mm. And I'm not sure, this may sound crass, because thinking about a piece of art from an objective, critical perspective, I suppose it just depends on how much I'm prepared to enjoy it. Yeah. I wonder if that matters, because I think reading, researching, and talking about how James Bond films has influenced conceptions of masculinity is incredibly interesting. But if you watch any of those old Sean Connery Bond films, they're disgusting.
He's terrible.
He literally smacks someone in the ass and says, "Man talk." And pushes her away.
Oh.
That happens in Goldfinger. Oh, also in Goldfinger, the film basically argues that he was able to turn a lesbian straight by forcefully having sex with her.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Sean Connery's the same man who Barbara Walters interviewed him. He said it's okay to smack a lady in the face. So
yes. Yes,
just saying. That really happened.
Yeah. So moving forward, because I still use, and I haven't had an opportunity to do this yet, but I teach at the college level and I teach a film analysis unit in my Composition 1 classes. And when we talk about analyzing film, I use a clip from American Beauty.
Sure.
And I haven't had the chance to think about whether or not I should actually do that now.
Right.
But I think my instinct is to maybe still do it only because we're talking about this as a way of understanding film. And even as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, but I can pick any, my God, there's so much to pick from. But my point, I suppose, is when thinking about something from a critical and academic perspective, I wonder if that might help us better understand what we can and cannot feel good about watching. Because I think you're right, the degree to which we enjoy. And film is tricky because it's so voyeuristic. It's inviting you to enjoy all the time. But there's ways to do that without implicating yourself. I don't quite know what that is.
Yeah.
But if we, because how do we talk about Alfred Hitchcock then?
Yeah.
If we're not able to do that. Okay. I think we've said enough.
Yeah.
Well, for, who cares? We're white guys. It doesn't matter. For pernicious white privilege, my name is Colin Cox.
I'm John Phelps.
Okay. See you later, buddy.
Thanks.